Fairy cream.
Yeah.
Well, it was titled in those days, and in 1923 when we was here, and they used to hire these boats at their Pocky's estate, as you see there. He was a chemist, and he had a sulky shed in the park, and he used to house his sulky in there, and his horse had full control of the whole of Stewart Park because it was completely fenced in those days. And he used to row from his property, and you can see the stairs still there from that cafe. Still see the stairs there. You wonder what the devil they were doing there. But that's where he used to row across and moor his boat on the other side, go and collect his horse and harness and take it up into Crown Street. And I remember as a boy he had a his chemist shop was about four doors down from Church Street on the Sydney side, northern side. And he had a huge big flask in the window as a boy. It had some sort of green liquid in it. And that's how it was. His beard was all down to his chest, you know, down. Big long beard. He used to scare the stripe out of us when he was there. But he went that for years and years and years. They had a walkway as you entered the park. They had that gate there. Horses and carts and things used to go through. But on the eastern side was a walk. They used to call it Lover's Walk because the trees completely covered the park. It was an arch right through, and it was absolutely lousy with ticks. And anybody used to go through there used to cop it. They used to always do. Anyhow, it got to the stage where so many people complained about it that the council turned around and took all the trees out. And there was a terrible stew about taking all these trees out. Instead of getting rid of the ticks, they took the trees out. Built here in 1940, and there's only three houses in the street. Arthur Young was halfway down the street. He was the first one that took over. When they bought this in 1912, he built there in 1913, I think he told me that he built there. And apparently he was a very keen tennis player. And because this was all bush, the only level part of the place was in the middle of Vickery Street. It was flat, it was just dirt. And anybody that used to drive a horse and cart used to go around the tennis court. And that's how it remained for many years. Now, Dick Young, his son, because they had the tennis, he became a pretty good tennis player. He reached the stage where he's in the A grades, and although it was fenced, and the weeds start to come through there. And a fellow named the subdivision down there near the railway there, just off Gift Street, which has been developed, and all young people were buying into that property. They got themselves together and they thought, gee, they don't play tennis. So they went up there to get on the court. They found that the Youngs had it, it was all locked up. So they wanted a key and said, oh, you know, you're not getting on this our court, no way. So he thought, well, he wasn't going to stop at that. It was on council property. So he went down to the council down there and said, listen, there's a tennis court road there. We want to get a game on it. And I don't know who the engineer was at the time. He said, you're mad. There's no tennis court up there. He said, there is. He said, no, I wouldn't believe it. So they went up there and they're looking, sure enough, it's there. That's just, that court was there when I was here. And, of course, they said, well, that's got to go. But he wasn't going to stop. He said, well, we want a court here. And the council pegged out the land where the tennis court is now. And I became interested in it, although I didn't get at the start of it, but there was about 10 of them with a horse and scoop and everything, and they dug all that out by hand and levelled it off there. And when I come in, when they started to put the loam in it, when they dug it out, but they got the loam from up out Kira there, and there was 12 of us who went up there, and we had a truck up there to get a loam, and we had to shovel the loam, shovel it under the truck in by hand, and we took down, I think, 10 loads a day. We went up there at 7 o'clock, or 7 o'clock, we had 12 hours. The next day, I couldn't close my hands. I had no skin on either hand. And there's 12 of us, out of the 12, there was a load short to do it. And how four more own blokes went up there the next day and got that, I don't know how on earth they did it, but they did. They went up and got it. See, I'm a life member of that. I'm a life member of the Master Builders Bowlers. A life member of the Agriculture Society. Yeah, I shouldn't even mention, I got tied up in the cancer peel. Now, the wife had cancer and she died. Jenny Dransfield, who was the sister in charge of the cancer session, we become very, very friendly. The Vivian Tyford, the main woman to get the money, they had two appeals, one appeal for the linear accelerator. When they started to put the building in, they was only going to put the linear accelerator in. Jenny Dansfield said, that's not good enough. We want the whole building for the cancer. And, that woman, she went to Sydney and saw the big brass and everything like that. And they'd got the floor level. Anyhow, they had her out and they agreed that she was right. But we need another, I think another $8 million. So that's when Jenny Dransfield talked me into it. I said, no, I don't want it. I wouldn't be in anything. She sits down here and she hammered me about it again. She took me up there at Christmas time and tried to talk me into it. And eventually I said, all right, okay, I'll do that. So they put me on the straight on the committee, Fisher Street, and I sort of looked after it. I mowed the lawn there and serviced it while I was selling all these tickets, and finally they raised enough funds. $26 million they raised, and of course after it was built and they got the linear accelerator, they didn't have the staff to do it. And of course, the committee that raised that money went in and helped them out where we could. So they formed themselves a cancer appeal up there. I stayed with them for 10 years and looked after their plants up there and everything. I've been around a bit.
You certainly have.
Well, the greatest achievement that I have was that, going back in the electricity department. Now, there's two big transformers down there in Swan Street that fed the whole of Wollongong. Now, we had meters down there and a few things down there measuring the load that's going out of that place all the time. Now, that fella that I was telling you about, that Norm Hart, he came from the Electricity Commission. I came to him, I kept to him. I read the meters down there every week. And I said to him, look, Norm, you've got to do something about that. Those transformers are 30% overloaded. You're going to burn them out. No, I'll burn them out, he said. Using his own words, those transformers are built like battleships. You can't burn them out. He said, I've seen them out at the commission. You could feel the heat coming off them 6 feet away. I said, yeah, that might be so, Norm. But they don't build them like that anymore. I said, if they 5 MVA transformers, that's all you're going to get out of them. You're not going to get any more. That's that. Oh, forget it. I've seen them there. All of them out there. You couldn't put your hand on them. I said, well, you're going to burn them out, Norma. Keep telling him. Now, if I told him once, and he used to say, oh, you weren't necessarily. And I said, look, have you ever thought if one of those transformers burn out down there, what's going to happen to Wollongong? You're going to shut it down. Oh, no. But have you thought about it? You're going to think about it, that if it does, what's going to happen? And, forget it. Now, as I say, that went on for nearly 12 months, 10 months or more, went on. And I didn't think there'd be a day that I'd walk out of that office there and I'd tell him. I said, things are not getting any better. They're getting worse. So he just say, all right, forget about it. At 2 o'clock one morning, my phone rings. And a service employee we had rung me to say, look, there's a transformer offline down here. I only got one going. He said, I don't like it. There's oil all over the yard, and I came to put it in. I'd like you to come down and see one then. So I went down with a torch, shining it up in the explosion vent. I said, gee, it doesn't look good to me, Jack. Looks like she's gone. So I went back. And this is 2 o'clock in the morning. I went back and got all the gear from the house shop and tested it out. And I said, well, it's burnt out. What are they going to do about Wollongong? They're going to have to black it out. I'll ring up Norm Hart at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'll let him have a good night's sleep. So I rang him up at 6 o'clock. I said, listen, Norm, you know there's transformers down south Wollongong? Yes, yes. I said, one of them burnt out. The phone's dead. Do you hear what I said, Norm? Yes, yes. I said, well, one of them burnt out. Get yourself in there and let's see what we're going to do about it. But you would not believe that man never came in till 9 o'clock. Now, in all that time that I was from where put a cup of tea on 4 o'clock, I'm thinking about what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? And I thought that we had a transformer exactly the same as the ones burned out at Bulleye, where I used to say that was sitting there doing nothing. It was all ready to go, but it had to get it out. So when I came in and explained it all to him, I said, what are you going to do about it? Didn't know. The shop steward walked in. We're all on strike, a lot of us. Everyone's out. So Norm Hart says, oh, geez, there's the answer. Just blame them. They're on strike. I said, that doesn't get you out of it, Norm. You've got to get power on. Doesn't matter how, you've got to get power back on. So I start talking to him there for half an hour, I suppose. I said, well, look, Norm, the only way I can see of doing it is bringing that transformer from Bulleye. Oh, he said, that's impossible. I said, what are you going to do? Just sit here and do nothing. I said, it's better to do that, to have a go and fail than sit here and do nothing. He said, but you couldn't do it in that time. And I said, well, I've rung up Coleman, who's a big I told him the tennis one was burnt out. Now I said, oh, I'm going to try and get that one in from Bulleye. And I said, now, there's only one thing I've got to ask you. Can you put that new transformer in on exactly the same spot as the other one come out? Not within an inch, half an inch, or anything, but bang on. Because if you don't get it on there, the bus won't fit. That's the answer. Can you do it? He said, yes, I think I can. I said, well, that's what we're going to try and do. After I sort of convinced him that, well, he said, I don't like it. I don't like it. He said, but I can't see now. I said, I don't like it either. But I said, you've got to do something. So I said, well, there's another thing, Norm. I said, I'm on jury duty. You're on what? I said, I'm on jury duty. I said, you'll have to do it. I can't do it. You can't do it. Oh, you've got to get off jury duty. I said, you've got no chance of getting off jury. I've been there when people have gone in there and asked to get off it. And do it, boy, oh boy, do that judge. Give them a dressing down. No way. You get it. If you got me, I'm not having that on. No way. He said, oh, I'll write a letter. I said, well, you can do what you like, but I'm not going to volunteer. So he wrote the letter. When I got up there, jury, we were all called in. We all sat up on the jury box. The judge comes out. Everyone stand. Copper things out. Edward Volmester, come out of here. Had to get up out of the jury box and stand in front of the jury box. And I can still see that man to this day. I can still see him. We're sitting in his chair. Why don't you want to serve on the jury? And I said, I'll serve on the jury. You will, he said. Come forward. Well, what's this rubbish about, he said. Well, I said, well, I had to go through all the details about it. I told you what I told you. If you don't get that transformer in today, you're going to have to black the whole town out, and I don't know for how long either. And I said, you know, I said, we're not talking about a toy, you know. This transformer weighs 27 tonne. He said, really? And I said, yes, that's what it is. It's one of those. How many other engineers are down there? And I said, four. Well, why can't they do it? I've been allotted to do this. But he said, well, look, I don't think I've got any other alternative to release you. You must be a very, very important person. Well, I said, I'm only just an employee, that's all. I said, that's all I am. I said, I'm on. So back I went. So I rang Coleman up then. I said, it's on. He organised all the heavy lift. And how on earth? I mean, it might have been my idea, but really speaking, Coleman was the man that did the job. Now, what I had four apprentices. I had all the men on strike. Everyone was out. Now, at home here, I had ice cream, plastic ice cream. I picked four of them up, and I wrote on them, A, B, C. Now, I get each one apprentice. Now, you're A phase, you're B, you're C. Now, when you take these nuts and bolts off this thing, put them in there. Don't go looking for them. They've got to be in there. You've got 5 minutes to reconnect this when it comes in. Coleman goes, come out there and here. He had a big crane in there. He lifted, getting the other one out. I had to take the four apprentices out there in the van. I had to get them to disconnect the one that's already there. And when Coleman saw it on there, it was fully rigged, fins and everything else. And Coleman said, you've got to get a police escort. So I rang up Norm Hart. I said, we want a police escort. I said, so he come back and they put three blokes on motorbikes turned up. And he said, what do you think you're doing? He said, you can't do that. Get that on the road. It'd take up the whole road. And I said, yeah, I know, but that's the only way we've got to get in it there. Oh, it's impossible. And I said, so I tried to explain to him the seriousness of it all. And he said, well, we'll see what we can do with the traffic. So the three coppers, I'll tell you, they used to go into and chase the traffic off the main road onto the side streets. The float with the transformers on, in the middle of the road, cars was parked on the side, was there. How they missed them, I don't know, but it took them with them. And that's how they took it in for Bulleye, right through Princess Highway, right down through Crown Street, down to Swan Street. Now, Coleman was down there, and he'd got the 50-ton crane down there, big. They lifted the all gear off that one to the other one, and we put the new one in place. Three of the meag time as engineers was out on street watching inside. They wasn't in there at all. They wasn't in either place. And Coleman, as I said to him, exactly on it, the old bugger, you know, he had a piece of chalk and he marked where the wheels were on this other one. And it went in exactly that spot, exactly on, because I said to him, no, within an inch, not further than half an inch. And of course, when that transformer was put in place, the bus fitted exactly. And I said to the kids, you got 5 minutes to connect it. And they did that in 5 minutes. Had we to go and even another half an hour, we'd had to start dropping load. And by 6 o'clock, we'd had to drop the lot. So actually, that would be my biggest achievement. And when we went next day, one of the engineers came to me and he said to me, how on earth did you do it? He said, I can give you six reasons why it is impossible. He said, but somehow or another you got round them. I don't know how, but somehow you did. He said, they should give you a medal. He said, you should be his mate for life. I told the Jack Bessel, who was with me when I told him it was burned down, I told him the story. I told him at least 6 months or more, he's going to burn it down. And I said, and he wouldn't take any notice. Now, that fella, in my opinion, has told his mates, it's filtered right round what I told, said to me, instead of congratulating me for what I've done, he said to me, have you ever thought of getting another job somewhere? And I said, why, what's wrong, what have I done, you know? And he said, you're too good to be here, you shouldn't be here, you get a job anywhere with your ability. No, I said, I'm quite happy where I am. But from then on, we were never good mates. And I think that was the cause of it all. It filtered back that I told him that he's going to burn it out. And I didn't like it.